Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Spaceman, I've been sitting on this one for a couple days. To your list of lifelong achievements, such as jumping off with a knife in your teeth, you should add having a sports rule named after you. You were so good or so dominant at a sport that they had to name a new rule, the Carolla Rule, which forever changed the game into an era of before and after Carolla. Thanks.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Lennox Lewis, one of the best of all time in studio, three-time heavyweight world champion.
How many times?
Three times!
Three times, fool!
Always great to see Lennox Lewis. Have so much respect for you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I always respected you for your ability in the ring. I had you in a weird way. I don't know what this is going to sound like to you, but I had you as sort of a Larry Holmes, like a guy who was dominant in his day, took on everybody they threw at him, and might not have gotten his due in his day. Like, Larry Holmes didn't quite get his due in his day. I think as time marches on, he gets a little more.
Yeah, fine wine, baby. You know what I mean? That's what I always tell people. Like, yo, they didn't really appreciate you enough. And I'm like, can't help that. I mean, nothing I can do about that. All I can do is just, you know, set records and make the younger guys try and achieve that, and when they can achieve it, then they realize how good I was.
All the losses you had, you avenged.
Yes.
We're looking at
Oliver McCall
crying, and Haseem Rahman and guys like that.
I heard you guys were talking about it today.
We were, and I'm a big boxing fan, and so Lennox's thing was, Lennox was long, Lennox was dominant, and Lennox had a kind of a Floyd Money Mayweather sort of thought, which is boxing is two parts. It's punch other people, but it's also not get punched,
right.
Or get punched a little less than you punch the other guy. Some guys just focus, like the Mexican fighters, on just punching the other guy. But your vocabulary isn't as great when you get out and you don't think as well. And you can lose. And I think Lennox thought, I'm going to punch this guy and see if I can not get punched.
Listen, Muhammad Ali was my hero. And he would say, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And I've all, you know, even when I run the Lennox Lewis League of Champions charity, and it's really little, it's camps for young kids, I always tell them that, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And it's all about defense. It's all about protection. It's all about longevity. You know, people used to say to me, oh, Muhammad Ali was your hero, but didn't he go into boxing too long? Didn't he stay too long? So mentally, that put a thing in my head saying, listen, I can't stay in this fight too long. If I want longevity out of the sport, I can't be hit so much. So, you know, the guys that last the longest don't get hit.
I think you gave one of the Klitschkos 60 stitches in one of your fights. I think... was it Vitaly or was it Vladimir? And who's
it was? It was Vladimir.
Vladimir.
Yeah.
And that's...
I'm sorry, it's Vitaly.
It's tough.
I know, and I get them mixed up as well.
Yeah. 60, when you're fighting a guy and he's opened up that way, are you trying to exploit that? Or is there a part of you that goes, this guy's going to go one way or the other, so I'll work the body?
Well, you know what it does? It steams me up because when it's like blood. You see blood and your eyes get open and it's like, okay. Although I'm not aiming for his eye, but his eye is on his face and I'm aiming for his face. So it all works together at one thing. It gives you strength. It gives you a lot of strength because when somebody's – a guy could be perfect in every way, but if he's – like, for instance, let me give you a thing that one of my trainers said to me. He said, if you want to be the best, you have to box on the inside. You have to learn how to box on the outside. And you got to have endurance. You got to have stamina. You got to be able to take a punch. And you can't get cut. You could be all of those, but if you cut easy and the people at home are watching it, they're going to think you're losing the fight because you're bleeding all over the place. Then you feel weak because that person's hitting you and you're bleeding. So it's like, oh, I'm bleeding. So he's feeling a lot stronger than I do. So, you know, very important not to get hit. Even to, before a fight, put Vaseline. People always want to know what Vaseline's for. It's to let the punches slide off. So when that leather hits your face, it doesn't tear your skin. It's for it to slide off your skin. And even to moisturize your skin so it doesn't, so it's pliable and it doesn't cut easy.
Most of it, though, is probably genetic, right? Like some guys just cut easy and some guys never seem to be cut. A name that I've always loved in the heavyweight ranks who might predate you a little bit, Ike Abeabuchi, who was around and everyone was scared of, but he sort of took care of himself by going to prison for insane things. Were you around with Ike Abeabuchi? Were anybody you feared? Anybody you did not? Well, I don't want to say feared, but you didn't look forward to getting into the ring with? And was Ike one of those guys?
No, I actually wanted to fight him, but he created a thing where people were scared of him because of how hard he punched and how strong he was. And, you know, a lot of boxers do that. They create this thing where, you know, Tyson did the same thing, where everybody was scared of him because of how he spoke and how he knocked out people and this and that. So until they got in there and did it themselves and see that it wasn't that bad, that's when they were okay.
Is it a true statement that Tyson was great when he could bully people, but when he couldn't bully people, he had no second gear, it seemed like? Like he got bullied, you bullied him, and he doesn't seem to have an answer. So, I mean, what happens with the Patriots and Bill Belichick, they have a bad first half, they score 3 points, they did blah, blah, blah. They just go in the locker room and they go, okay, regroup, we'll do something different. And then they come out and they beat the crap out of the other team. Tyson, if he got bullied in the first half, he had no second half. He had no other gear.
Right. Well, what I say to that is I'm a five-dimensional fighter. He's a one-dimensional fighter in the fact that he has to come forward and throw punches. If he can't come forward, he's going to have difficulty. If you move around away from him, he's going to have a little difficulty because he has to, you know, refocus every time you move. And it's a difficult thing for guys of one dimension. They can't switch it up. I'm a boxer, puncher, mover.
Yeah. Yeah, you, for a guy who's 6'5", 6'6"?
6'5".
Good movement, good defense, used your length well. And if you got a guy like Tyson, I feel like a lot of guys didn't use their length well against him, but Lennox definitely did. Tyson also, like, famously is nuts. You guys fought. Didn't he bite you in the shin?
He did. He bit me. And
who could have seen that coming?
It was one of those days where I didn't know what was in his head. Obviously, he wasn't a vegetarian at the time. And, you know, his part of his fighting was biting. And, you know, I think we're gladiators. We're not supposed to bite. We're supposed to fight. So I wasn't really expecting that. And to my astonishment, you know, he bit me and it was a serious bite.
What was the biggest – do you have to get, like, tetanus shots, rabies shots, whatever shots. Yeah. Well, I mean, you gotta get shots. If somebody bites you, you have to get shots.
Yeah,
right?
You have to. You have to, because it's worse. It's a worse bite than a dog.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, we talked about rabies and all those things. Right. You have to take 16 needles every 3 hours.
Oh.
Or some madness like that.
Ivan Drago.
What was I going to ask Lance? Well, I'll tell you, this half of the show brought to you by LifeLock. That'll buy me some time. LifeLock.com. Enter Adam. Tommy John. TommyJohn.com/Adam and Geico at Geico.com. So you're born in England. You go to Canada. You end up fighting in the Olympics for Canada because that's where you resided.
Right.
Two-time gold medal?
No, two-time Olympics. Gold medal in the second Olympics.
Oh, second Olympics.
Yeah.
Why does everyone move to Canada when you're 12?
Well, the reason I moved because my mother immigrated over there. And she went over there to stay with her friend. And then she realized it was a great place and I was missing her son. So she called for me over there, and first time I seen snow, it was weird. At the airport, I was like, "What? Look at all this white, fluffy stuff. This is great." Snow in England was like dirty snow.
Right.
So seeing the snow, went to school in Canada. It was great experience. First time I learned about tobogganing. Like, oh, is that all you do? Just slide down the hill? Yeah, and then we run back up.
Legs had to go last because you'd break it in half every time.
That was good. And then I realized that hockey wasn't my sport because my feet, like at size 15, doesn't really fit into most hockey skates. And then I realized skating wasn't for me because most of the good skaters start when they're 5 years old. So, you know, I wasn't really into no winter sports. And I was into individual sports, which was, you know, obviously boxing. I played football, basketball, volleyball, all sports, which helped me for boxing.
You never came out of retirement. You never took that last big out-of-retirement money fight. You see, in a way, Floyd Mayweather is sort of diabolical because he's taking novelty fights and getting paid crazy money that he didn't even get paid when he fought guys who maybe could have beat him.
Right.
Now he's like fighting Connor. Kangaroos and getting huge paydays. And it's an interesting thing because you could do. You can't fight the best in your division when you're 40 something years old
right.
at that weight division, but you can fight a guy as an MMA guy or a guy as a phenom in China or whatever it is. And that's what he's doing, and he's just can't. You know, these are pretty easy paydays for him, I would say.
Very easy. He's boxing against people that are not in his caliber. You know,
right?
UFC, they got five different disciplines. You have to learn to wrestle, to choke people, to kick, to punch, all these different things. Only a boxer only has to use his hands, and that's what he's good at.
You must have gotten offers to come out and fight a Klitschko or somebody at some point after you decided you were going to retire.
Yes, I did. And I'm like, why did you wait till I retire? And, you know what I mean?
And the money must have been astronomical, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry I didn't take it.
Oh, really?
Money's always good.
I mean, we're talking over $20 million?
Oh, more.
Yeah. Well, that's over.
More than over.
More than
over. More than over.
No, what I mean, we're talking about $50 million?
Oh, that's getting close.
Wow. Damn. I mean, the thing, and I've kind of talked to you about this before, but and I respect it, although if my son made this decision, I'd never speak to him again. But you're in good shape when you retire. You don't hang on, and it, you know, it's not one of those things where you owe the IRS a bunch of money and you have to keep fighting, and it's kind of sad, and this guy's punch drunk. You're in good shape. You have your faculties. You probably know that if you put together a 4 months worth of training camp, you could beat anyone in the world in the heavyweight division.
I sure feel that way. I mean, I'm watching these guys right now, but I realize they're much bigger, much, much bigger. And, you know, every era, the heavyweights are getting bigger. My era before me was obviously Muhammad Ali. He was like 210, you know, the guys that around 200, the heavyweights. Then when I came in, it was like 215, 220, 230. This era is 230, 245, 250. So we're just getting bigger.
And you knew, I mean, you must have known you could, you had one more fight in you for $50 million, and you probably would have won and not sustained a lot of damage. Why not one more fight when you're 38?
Well, you know, I was trying to get out of the sport because there was a time where, I, you know, you obviously have to retire with all your faculties. And for me, I just wanted to get rid of all the misfits out of the sport. And I did. And then, you know, Klitschko came at me and said, well, you know, I'm the best of the upcoming era. And my trainer said, well, you can beat the guy, best guy from this era and the guy that's starting the next era. So I said, you know what? That's a good idea. I will. And he said it would be an easy fight for me, but it wasn't easy.
I'm going to bring up a name and I'll let Max Pata look this guy up. I don't think I've ever brought him up on the show, but you want to talk about a guy that was a little even more Mike Tyson than Mike Tyson.
It's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, can't wait.
Not even black.
Oh, no.
David Tua.
Ah, the Samoan.
David Tua may have been, was stockier. If you can picture a guy being stockier than Mike Tyson, yeah, like more compact, heavier, bigger calves, like David Tua was a crazy miniature compact. I mean, that guy must have been 5'10", you know, 250.
Yeah, he was a heavyweight fighter.
Linebacker.
It was a heavyweight, but man, was that guy thick.
Oh, yeah, he's had some big legs. Tree trunk legs.
You must have fought Tua at some point, right?
I fought Tua, and I couldn't understand why he took the fight with me because, you know, although I'm bigger than him, but in the fight it showed I'm a lot quicker than him as well. He couldn't really touch me. And I think we had a good combination in the first few rounds, which kind of slowed him up. And the time when he really wanted to take advantage, it was too late.
You find a nice stocky picture, David, too. I'll tell you about LifeLock. LifeLock, security breach occurs when an intruder gains unauthorized access to an organization's protected data. Cyber criminals, people, they're out there trying to rip off your identity and take it to the bank, or just sit at home and go to your bank and drain that bank account. You got to watch out for cyber threats. Good thing there's LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. Adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your devices you can't easily see or fix on your own. If there's a problem, and you won't have a problem, but if there's a problem, they will have agents who will work to fix it. It's 2019. We got to protect ourselves, people. Let's get the industry standard. Let's get LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security can see threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam for 10% off your first year. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com or 1-800-LifeLock for 10% off.
Look at David Tua.
Wow.
Well, now, this is a little chunkier David Tua. You can find a newer, or I don't know. There's Lennox.
Angry Dad.
That's a lot of man. Wow. I mean, he's 5'10", 250.
Solid.
He was a strong guy.
That was when? That wasn't when he was fighting me.
No, this is slightly tired David Tua. You'll find a younger,
beleaguered,
spry 245 David Tua. Event, by the way, Lennox is here to talk about. It's Premier Boxing Champions on Fox. That'll be tomorrow night as you hear this. Lennox is going to be doing the color commentary. This is a featherweight title fight that's Santa Cruz and Rivera. You're going to be doing color commentary.
Yeah.
Is that a thrill? Is that nerve-wracking? Is that something?
No, it's fun. I'm doing something I like, something I know, and I can talk about it very easily. You know, basically breaking down a fight, breaking down the fighters, thinking of what, you know, what one guy should be doing and one guy is not doing.
How much of it is that? Like, how much of your success, I mean, you're tall, you're strong, you have size, and you have speed. What percentage of it was a strategy for you?
Oh, every percentage, because, you know, if you walk into the ring without a strategy, then, you know, it's going to be a problem in there. If you go in there with a strategy and it doesn't work, then make sure that you're able to think on your feet to change up the strategy, because a lot of boxers don't do that. They go in there and say, I'm going to knock him out. All right, you go in there, you can't knock him out. What else are you going to do?
Now what?
How do you win the fight? Be a boxer. Be, you know, get the points.
How much of your corner? It's so funny because I see so many corner guys – The funniest one is always when they do the Spanish translation and the guy's there and he's screaming at him in Spanish and they have the translator guy and he's going, "You're not punching enough. You got to punch more. Come on. Come on, punch." And it's like, that's his strat. That what do you need a guy in the corner for that? You could use a parrot for that.
Thanks for the inside tip.
How much are your guys, how much coaching, how much stuff could you like absorb, like go, okay, I hear what you're saying and I'm going to execute it?
Well, the big thing is when you're training in the gym, you always get used to your trainer's voice because he's always speaking to you all the time. So mm-hmm. when you get into a big fight, you can recognize his voice out of millions of people. Doing what he says is one thing. Being able to do that, that's what I was able to do. My trainer could say, losing the fight, you need to win this round. I can go out there and win that round. So it's being able to think on your feet and react on your feet and being able to do what comes. And what comes is something different because it's important to be able to, if plan A is not working, to switch to plan B. So that's the important part, to have a couple plans out there. So if one fails, you'll always have another one.
Tua, when he fought Lennox in 2000, was 37-1, and Lennox was 37-1-1.
Mm. Oh wow!
So that's a pretty even matchup there. David Tua looking
that's
a little spry.
Yeah, man.
That's a lot of hair that matchup.
Yeah. See what kind of shit? I was even wearing my own underwear. I wasn't wearing anybody else's underwear.
Wearing Lennox's underwear. It was Annie Lennox, actually.
How tall is he?
This
how
is where he
Tua?
Came at me. He was about 5'5".
Wow.
No, he wasn't.
He's
5'10". He seems 5'10".
To Lennox, everyone seems 5'5".
Yeah. He in that picture, he's kind of squatting and Lennox is kind of pushing up. But he was a short guy compared to Lennox.
He was short and strong.
But as you can see, he was a strongly built human being.
You see those teeth?
Thank you, Max Zapata, by the way, for not showing me the sloppy, drunken version you showed us in the first time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That was bad. Stocky. I gave you stocky. I know.
Those red teeth, he actually stocky. Presented me them before I fought him. I'm like, what is this? What is this? Is this voodoo? He said, no, this is what this is a warrior thing. And I'm like, okay, cool.
He was even the necklace thing
he
wore?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. He was sort of respectful about it?
Yeah, he's nice, real nice guy. He gave me these beads. He didn't say, this is an act of war. I had to go over to my corner and they said, it's war. He's like, okay, I didn't have nothing to give him. So I'll keep these and give it to him afterwards.
Here come the briefs.
Whose power you really felt? Like, who's a guy who you went, wow, this guy hits hard?
Power I really feel. Oliver McCall hit me with a good punch because I was going forward with my motion and he was going forward with his motion. And then, you know, when two bulls collide, something has to give. And I gave.
Oliver ended up just sort of quitting and having a nervous breakdown. It's a weird position. It's kind of like when Fan Man flew into the fight with...
That was
Holyfield.
That was Holyfield and Riddick Bowe.
And Riddick Bowe, and like one guy, I think it was Riddick. One guy could see Fan Man coming in, and the other guy couldn't. But it's like you had to sort of keep fighting, but stop fighting. Like, what do you do when a guy's having a nervous breakdown? You keep punching him.
Let me tell you, I was prepared for everything. I wasn't prepared for that. You know, I came back to the corner, and the Manny said, "You're not fighting." I said, "Manny, he's crying. Well, I don't care. Beat him up." That's what he said. I'm like, okay.
Did you keep in contact with him after the fight? Did you?
This guy writes me emails every month.
Oliver McCall, he
wanted a rematch. He wanted a rematch. Yeah, and I didn't take him really too serious. But his son's fighting now, and I actually spoke with him. He's a really nice guy. He's turned into somebody that you can speak with. So
his son must be a heavyweight.
Son's a heavyweight. Yeah.
Wow.
What do you think of the new guys, the guys that are so long and wild
tall.
And, I mean, just they're like 6'9 or 7 foot and they're lean and they're kind of spidery and crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Deontay, he weighs 212.
And he's 6'8"?
Like 6'8", yeah, 6'8". And, yeah, you have to look at, what's his name?
Tyson Fury?
Tyson Fury, 6'9". And then Joshua is 6'7".
Anthony Joshua? Yeah.
245.
Do you think they need a super heavyweight division?
Yes. I think they should have one. I mean, It's funny because you have to say, what is the ultimate weight for heavyweight? Is it 250, 212? Which is the weight? I think it's 250.
Anything above 250 super heavyweight?
Anything, no, super heavyweight.
Super duper?
Super duper. I like that. This is the super duper heavyweight field here.
Do you like LL Cool Jab as a nickname?
You know, I heard that name before, you know, and I, the only thing I could think about that is like, the guy's got to be a cool guy. Really cool. Who's that? Whose name is that?
That's you.
That's me?
Yeah.
Well, I decided. I mean, you got Lennox Lewis. You got Mama Said Knock You Out with Cool J.
Yeah.
It's right there. LL Cool Jab.
Cool Jam.
Jab.
Jab.
Sorry, jab. Cool Jab. Cool Jab. Cool Jab.
Yeah. He had a good
I don't
jab.
Like the last part of it because it just puts me in one barrel.
He does so much more than jabbing.
Yeah, it's like I'm a pugilist specialist.
LL Cool Punch. Yeah, we'll work on
it. It's got to kind of work off the LL Cool J, though. It's tough. It's tough, but it's got to be done. All right. You did the video with LL Cool J and J-Lo, right?
Why don't you, because, you know.
How'd that happen?
Yeah, you know what? I was in town and they were shooting the video and somebody said, hey, let's go. That's how it was. That's how it
no
was.
No agents involved.
No.
I figured. Yeah. I mean, it made sense. Where was that? Was that New York?
That was New York. Yeah, New York.
So you get out of the Olympics, you fight. Was there some thought about fighting for the UK or was it always just, I'm going to fight for Canada?
Well, at that time, Canada didn't really have a professional program and most of the guys went to America. The fact of my history being from England, you know, I decided to go back to England because I wanted a country behind me, supporting me. At that time, Frank Bruno was around.
Yeah.
And he was the big man at that time.
Frank Bruno had a crazy physique. Mm. Now, take your time, expat. I don't want him in a bathrobe scratching his nuts and nursing a beer. I want a good example.
Another New Year's down the drain.
Of what I'm talking about, which is Frank Bruno had a crazy muscular physique. Like we've talked about the Mike Weavers of the world and guys like that just had these sort of crazy. Ken Norton had a crazy physique, but Frank Bruno quietly may have had the craziest of all the physiques in terms of crazy muscles. Just and again, the beauty of boxing is most of the time the guys that were a little smoother in the physique won, not the guys with the big
the
bulging
glamour muscles.
Biceps and lats. And I don't know why, but the smoother guys traditionally seem to do the guys who built like Muhammad Ali would beat Mike Weaver and Ken Norton. They beat those guys for you never think about if you're making a movie, you wouldn't cast it that way. But Frank Bruno was a big dude.
He was, you know, it's interesting because I was watching him fight one time and I'm like, yo, this guy's fighting guys that are easy. And he looks slow too. But what I found out, it's a different kettle of fish when you go in there. You know, it's like go in there, you think the fight's going to be easy. He actually got me upset in the fight because he hit me and I didn't like it. So I reacted with a left hook. And at that time is when I gave him the 15 unanswered punches. Mm-hmm. Threw out of that reaction of him hitting me and me hitting him back. So
Frank was big in the UK.
Yes.
You said, I'm going to leave Canada after the Olympics, and I'm going to the UK and start my career there.
Yes.
Well, how old were you when you won the title?
I was about 27.
And when was the Bruno fight? How far into it were you then?
Boy. I'm a boxer. I can't remember
the name. Yeah. I don't remember it. Find a good Frank Bruno shot. God, that guy was a beast.
Damn.
I mean, look at that guy's physique.
Jesus.
And
look
at
his thighs.
Bruno is, you know, he's 6'3", and he's 240, 245, and ripped. I mean, just shredded.
His pecs look angry.
I mean, look at that guy's physique. Look at his legs. It's like somebody removed the skin from your legs and showed the musculature in his legs. I mean, that's crazy
insane.
Is that guy's physique?
Yeah, it's like the bodies exhibit at the museum.
Yeah, right. Like that's literally what it looks like. It's insane. All right. But Lennox dispatched him, right? Did you get rid of him? Did you get him out of there?
Got him out of there.
I
got him out of there. It was a fight for Britain. There can only be one champ.
Yeah,
only one king.
All right. Oh, sorry, yes. Speaking of kings, I do have another moniker to submit to the jury. LL Cool Slay. He slays them. Slays the dragons. All right, reach
it's okay. It's made me think about the toboggan, you know. And
no, not that kind of slay.
I get you.
Yeah. All right, let me tell you about Tommy John, and then we'll break and get into some news. Tommy John, men and women all across America are crazy about Tommy John, the most comfortable underwear on the planet, both men and women's underwear. They got the no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay put waistbands and a range of fabrics and designs. They move with you. Dress shirts, underwear, all the best stuff. I mean, most people can't afford to put their last name on the side of their underpants and weigh in with David Tua. You got to get Tommy John on there. Go Anywhere Apparel is versatile enough to go from the boardroom to the boxing class. Well, we like that. And the lady stuff is all back in stock now as well. Best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. The best. Right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam right now and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right.
Hold on.
Yes.
No wedgies?
No wedgie guarantee.
Can you believe that?
I know.
Welcome to 2019. Hell of a time to be alive.
I don't even think I got a 12-year-old son. Kids don't beat up on each other anymore. They don't roughhouse. They don't wrestle. Like, he'll have a sleepover with like five of his friends, and I'll go into his room, and all five guys will just be laying around like playing like video games. And I'll be like, why don't you have each other in headlocks? How come you're not giving each other wedgies or titty twisters, right? Or any of the good Indian burns. Remember the Indian burns? Like grab and start taking, like all the good stuff.
What about
like
that one where you rub the guy's head and you rub his hair and make
a noogie?
And they're swirly where you put his head in the toilet. I mean, there's all sorts of
wedgie.
All sorts of good stuff. Yeah. They don't do it anymore. I had a funny, I knew we jumped the shark as a society when my son was wearing, I think it was like a choker. I think it was a choker, and I was looking at it, sort of like a handmade choker, and I went, oh, did your girlfriend make you that choker, Sonny? And he went, no, my boyfriend Jensen made it for me. And he walked out of the room like he just beat me in an argument.
Take that.
Take that.
You got served.
But then all these dads wearing the stupid bracelets. They got to wear all the bracelets. You see the bracelet dads? And you know what the answer is? My daughter made it. It's good. Hang it on the rear view of the truck and get on with your goddamn life. You don't have to wear it out. Yeah. Hey, she made me a hat with a dildo on it. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. I don't want to be rude.
I got to wear it to the park.
No, you give it to your friend.
You give it to your friend. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and do the news with Gina Grad and Lennox Lewis. Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
It's Mark Garagos.
We do a show called Reasonable Doubt.
Best hour in the universe.
Sometimes 54 minutes.
And sometimes we've been known to do 48 minutes as well, and sometimes an hour six.
Either way, we round up. Best hour. Like Mark Bill.
It's exactly like in 6-minute intervals, exactly.
Every Saturday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Subscribe to Reasonable Doubt, the best hour in the universe, with Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla. Every Saturday on Podcast One, Carolla Digital, and Apple Podcasts.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Here's a question for you, Lennox Lewis, as I think about you. I've said to people in the past that boxing is a sport, and you can be good at a sport, like you could be good at tennis or basketball, but you don't have to be angry and be good at tennis. You can just be good at tennis. Is that how you approach boxing? Like, I'm better at this than other guys, but I don't need to bite them, and I don't need to snarl at them, and I don't need to yell at them.
100%.
It's a sport, and I'm going to study the sport. I'm going to be better at the sport than them, and I'm going to beat them.
Yeah, I always get upset when guys take it off of that. You know, they start talking about your mother and this and that. I'm like, you shouldn't really dwell there. You shouldn't go that far. You know, you could say, oh, you're a bum. I'm going to beat you. You're lousy. This and that. You know, that's good talk. But when you start talking, taking it personal, it's bad talk.
Yeah. The reason that wouldn't work for me is because they'd go, your mom's a whore. And I'd go, well,
I mean,
you might got me
there. Make some valid points.
She didn't make any money off it.
It wasn't perfect. That's for sure.
Probably better take the Lennox approach where you're focusing on strategy and technique and not on puffing your chest at her. You know what I mean?
I tried to, like explain. I've had that conversation with a few people just from my limited boxing experience where they went, you're a comedian and you're nice and this guy's mean and he's got tattoos and he's a badass. And I'd go, no, it's just a sport and I've played the sport more than they've played the sport. So it doesn't really matter if they're angry or they have tattoos. If you've started playing tennis or the piano or basketball or football or whatever at a young age, then you'd be better at it than a guy. He's angry. He hasn't played basketball, but he's got a tattoo and he's angry at the court.
He's the bad boy of tennis.
Yeah. It's like, look, aggression, I get it. And you're punching people and all that. But at the end of the day, Lennox won because he was better at the sport than these guys were.
Because he hated everybody.
Right. And the guys who wanted to treat it and be motivated by anger and sort of an emotion would actually get beat quicker than the guy who was engaging in the sport.
You know, somebody said to me, he said, boy, you're so calm in the ring. What do you do? You know, why are you so calm, outside of the ring, and you're vicious inside? What's the difference? I said, it's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, Mr. Jekyll would come in. As soon as I step into the ring, Mr. Jekyll appears. Mr. Hyde appears when I'm out of the ring.
Right. But even inside the ring, you never seem to lose your composure. I mean, it seemed pretty calculated.
My thing is pure focus. Pure focus. I only see one thing, and that's me winning. You know, people always say, well, you know, why are you so focused? Why do you look like that? Because I'm imagining myself winning ahead of time. It's like I've won. If I lose, I don't know where that came from because I wasn't thinking about losing. You know what I mean? So I've always thought about winning.
I would imagine just hearing this conversation, it would be more intimidating to see somebody who you're smack talking not react than somebody just smack talking you.
Right.
You know, if you can't get under their skin, now you're scared.
Well, there's two parts to that because you could be talking to them, they're listening and they're taking you in, but they don't want to show that they're taking you in. And then everything that you've said, oh, I'm going to smash you, I'm going to do this, they're thinking about it at nighttime. Then when you get close to the fight, it's like, okay, they're still thinking about what you've said. They've never said anything back to you. So that's the power going into the ring. You got to interrupt that power and say, no, you're not. You can't beat me. Ah, and laugh at him. Now, that's when it works. That's the mind games there.
Right.
If a man's laughing at you when you told him you're going to knock him out, it's like, okay.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he's not taking me serious. I'm upset. You know, I'm going to knock him out. Yeah, sure, buddy.
All right, Gina, what do you got?
Well, Jussie Smollett, he finally opened up to GMA's Robin Roberts and told his story about his claims of a racist and homophobic attack, which occurred in Chicago 2 weeks ago. He had gone pretty silent about this, and then he talked to Robin. So before we get into a lot of the story, here's about a minute and 20-second clip from the interview. He's talking about how he was on the phone with his manager at the time of the attack, and this is what he has to say.
He was on the phone. I heard, as I was crossing the intersection, I heard Empire. And I don't answer to Empire. My name ain't Empire. And I didn't answer. I kept walking. And
hold on, pause it for a second. People yell, hey, man, show, and I stop and turn around all the time.
You shouldn't answer to that.
What am I, an idiot? I should never do that. I get, hey, man, show! And I go,
hey,
I shouldn't answer that.
No,
listen,
that
I answer to Champ. Hey, Champ!
Oh, well, that's different. Hey, Dick? Huh? Yeah?
Must be me.
Talking to me? All right. He doesn't answer
to
Empire.
Like that.
All right. No more answering to man show. And no more telling anyone when they, where are the juggies? No more giving out addresses.
Don't dignify that.
Where's Dr.
Okay.
Drew?
Well, I get
up
that,
yours.
Too. All right. I do that. Hey, man, Joe, where's Dr. Drew? I always stop and turn around.
Don't do it.
No more. All right. Here we go.
Empire. So I turned around and I said, did you just say to me? And I see the attacker masked And he said, this MAGA country punches me right in the face. So I punched his ass back. And then we started tussling. You know, it was very icy. And we ended up tussling by the stairs. Fighting. There was a second person involved who was kicking me in my back. And then it just stopped. And they ran off. And I saw where they ran. And the phone was in my pocket, but it had fallen out. And it was sitting there. And my manager was still on the phone. So I picked up the phone and I said, Brandon. And he's like, what's going on? And I said, I was just jumped. And I looked down and I see that there's a rope around my neck, which I hadn't.
You hadn't noticed it before?
No,
you
didn't because see? It was so fast. You know what I'm saying? It was so fast.
How long did...
So he told the police that when he was on the phone with the manager that, you know, when the attack occurred. But he, as we talked about the other day, he won't hand his phone over to the police. He explained that he's trying to protect various contacts. You know, he doesn't want them getting out their personal information leaked, you know, his famous friends or whatever. As for why it took so long for him to call 911, he explained that there was a level of pride. He didn't want to look weak. But when police finally came about 30 minutes later, he showed them bruises on his face and a burn on his neck. Smollett said he believed. Believes the cloud of doubt around his story is also rooted in racism and his public criticism of the president. But like we said before, there's a lot of printed information he gave them that was redacted, and they're just and there's no surveillance footage of this happening, even though there's surveillance cameras everywhere. So the police are still kind of scrambling to make sense of this.
Well, my feeling is it's he said, she said, and he's got to give him the phone, or he's got to figure out technologically, and I don't know how to do this, but you got to figure out a way to, if someone's on the phone and this all went down and it was all recorded and it's going to verify everything you said,
right.
You got to get him the phone. I don't know who else is he worried? I don't know enough about phones. There's people's names on that phone that they're going to find and put out.
Their name and their phone number, at least. He said there's some private photos. He doesn't just want to say,
here's text
my
with
phone.
Cast members about other cast members. Yeah. About the,
but you think it'll be leaked by the police?
I guess
if I was that famous, on TV or whatever, I wouldn't. Depending on the crime, of course, I wouldn't want to give my phone over to.
But do you have to give them? So I guess what I'm saying is. Isn't there a way to supervise this? Like, when there's some article in Congress or something and they go, you can go into this room, you can access this room, you can view it, and then you can leave, but you can't leave with it.
Right.
You can't take a picture of it,
it
with your phone.
Like, you can meet with a detective and, like, go over things.
Yeah,
Doable. It doesn't seem like you could just be there and go, here's this night, but no other nights.
I'm confused. The man's on the phone with his manager. How is he? There's nothing being recorded at that time. So what do the police want with his phone?
A record of the call?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Now they're
to prove
sort of,
he was on the phone?
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, even though...
To oh, there's nothing that can't get the conversation?
No, they're not recording.
No, you have to go to Apple.
Conspiracy.
Oh, well, then it's not so. Then all you're trying to do is...
prove that he was on the phone?
At that time, which doesn't prove
that
much.
Yeah.
Well, and from what I've read, and Chris, maybe you know, but the manager maybe has changed his story a little bit, whether they were on the phone or not. So it's very confusing.
Max Zapata, you look like, as a young person, you seem like you have an idea here.
No, I'm also confused about why they need his phone. Like, I don't know if don't they still keep phone records of whenever you're on the phone? Like, can't you just go to the phone company?
Well, you're right. They hand you a bill, and it's itemized of what the calls you've made.
So it's got to be more than you were on the phone at this time, because that doesn't prove anything other than you were on the phone at that time.
Yeah.
So there must be something that they think they're going to be able to retrieve. Somebody's listening. Someone will tell us.
I'll be curious.
Let me tell you, this is the perfect time to bite. That was the perfect time to start biting.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's when you want to bite.
Yeah. Not during a press conference.
Right.
Yeah. I've talked to Mark Garagos about triangulating and things of that nature, which they wouldn't let him do with Scott Peterson, I think.
Seems like
the technology may not have been what it is today, too.
They wouldn't give him, they wouldn't let him have it. They could have done it. He was trying to triangulate like Peterson's whereabouts during the blah, 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 and they wouldn't do it. But now maybe they will. Anyway, we'll find out more about it.
That story will absolutely be – it will continue and we'll find out more. So a Delta Airlines flight from Orange County, California to Seattle was forced to make an emergency landing in Reno, Nevada when it hit this extreme pocket of turbulence. A couple pictures to show you. Passengers on board reported being tossed out of their seats, and a large beverage cart, which we're looking at, flipped over in the aisle. Three people were injured, taken to the hospital. One passenger reported that the plane went into a full nosedive at least twice. Ugh. It's believed the turbulence was related to a strong winter storm passing through the area.
This is why you have to drink on a plane, kids.
Yeah. Well, they're trying. The drink cart was out.
I know.
They had to flip with it.
I
said stir it, not shake it.
The last... God, I think about the last five times I've ordered booze on a plane, they'd never charge me. Like when I was in coach and I just went, give me a vodka and tonic or whatever.
You they got
just
it, like,
they do the, yeah, we'll come back.
Two sticklers.
And they just, it's a weird catch-as-catch-can thing with the charging of the booze. Sometimes they're on it, other times they just don't seem to care.
Right.
Which means it must not cost them anything.
It must not. I've been on Southwest several times where I'll have the drink ticket, but it's either expired or it's up in my bag above. I'm like, I'm in the middle seat or whatever. I'm like, I can get it. Don't worry about it. I'm like, thanks.
There's in a world full of policies around booze, especially, there is no policy about booze in the air. Has anyone ever asked? I've never asked. You're in the airport.
Okay.
You go, as I've stated in 50 Years Will All Be Chicks, I think, and somewhere in that book. I was like in the Phoenix airport, and a dude who looked like Dawson's grandfather owned a gold mine in 1871.
Pickaxe like, over his shoulder?
She just walked up to the bar, and he went, have a Jack straight up or whatever. And the guy went, I need to see some ID. And the guy went, you got to be shitting me. Because the guy was like 72 and had a full gray beard. And he's like, no ID, no drink.
How do I know you're over 21?
And it's like, but it's okay. And you just go.
I can lose my job.
Right. That's what it is, by the way. Sure. You're going to lose your job at the airport. Yeah. Good for
precious,
you.
The precious commodity.
Your dad will drink some champagne if you ever lose your job. Anyone other than a pilot who loses their job at an airport, that's a good day.
Do you get drunker quicker in the air?
I like to think so.
In Denver, yeah.
I've never really tested it out.
You've probably taken more flights than all of us combined.
You do.
Yeah, but I don't get drunk.
No.
Well, we're going to have to kind of wrap this up. Lennox is premier boxing champion of the Fox. Yeah. There. Go check it out. Or not.
It's got Oliver McCall in here.
No, but then you get in the air. They don't want to see ID.
Yeah.
No ID. I've never seen anyone around me. I mean, look, I'm old, but I've flown with 23-year-old chicks in a row in front of me. They didn't ask them for any ID.
Yeah.
When you're on the ground, it's like we ask for ID every time, all the time. It doesn't matter who it is. You get in the air, no ID, and we'll charge you or we won't charge you. Also, here's another one they do as well. This is kind of the element of where it's sort of like if you go, you're McDonald's or whatever, and you go, or at In-N-Out Burger, and you go, oh, could I have a little extra ketchup? And then they reach in with both hands to a basket of ketchup, and they throw it at you, like, never come back, never ask for ketchup again.
That ties you up
for a lifetime ketchup. It's a condiment version of shut up and leave. But I have also asked for, like, a vodka soda, and they give you two little vodka bottles, which is, I don't want to, obviously, look, it's 11 in the morning. You obviously have
this
a problem.
Is a lifestyle.
I don't want to have to come back in 20 minutes. Like, here, take this and go away. No charge.
Yeah.
It's double. Just everything, right?
Question.
Yes.
Has anybody ever been arrested in the air?
Oh, you brought up a very good question, yes. Mr. Lewis.
They've been, they've had air marshals. They've had other people like restrain them, and they get they get emergency landed and dragged
Tell
off
them
the
your
plane.
Idea.
But they're arrested when they're on the ground.
You're talking about something. You're broaching a subject that Adam's passionate about. Please,
I just want a cage in the back of the airplane so I don't have to divert to Denver.
I couldn't understand. I know you guys
must fly a ton of private. Lines.
Yeah, you must have seen this one where this guy came on the plane. He wanted a drink. And the lady said, no, you can't. And he pushed her. He was like upset that he didn't get his drink. He's like, what's wrong with this guy? He really wanted a drink.
That was Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
He was overserved. I may have been overserved. Oh, you have the line from In 50 Years Will All Be Chicks? Sorry.
No, I was just confirming that.
Oh, it was. It was in
there. That's what it was.
Yeah, so anyway, they don't ask for ID in the air. Yeah. They don't check.
Yeah. They don't want you up and down permissive. Bothering them.
They're just, it's catch as catch can in the air. But anyway, that is my greatest fear, that nosedive.
Yeah.
Even if it's temporary.
It's no good. Mm-hmm. So TMZ reports that Kim Kardashian West had an unforgettable Valentine's Day, courtesy of husband Kanye West and saxophonist Kenny G.
Oh, no.
Kanye arranged for the famous saxophonist to serenade his wife with a special Valentine's Day performance in their living room that all the furniture was taken out of and filled with dozens of multicolor roses. We have the video. Feast your ears on this.
All right.
And watch Kanye's response.
Kenny G. Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, we'll get the sound worked out. Kenny, so it's a giant living room filled with roses that are coming up from the ground.
Yeah, like singular vases.
They're in vases.
Yeah.
There are 250 roses equally spaced, like a graveyard.
Yeah.
It's a completely empty room with just the vases of roses and Kenny G.
Now watch Kanye.
Do you have to pay Kenny G for this? Or I know everyone's nodding, but is he doing, is it kind of cool publicity for him? Like,
yeah.
As we were recording this, Kenny G is the number one trending topic. Online.
He can't,
saying,
he should
like,
be paying
buy that
Kanye.
Kind of publicity.
What's he need $40,000 of Kanye's money? You know, it's not like he's doing an 8-minute comedy set in his backyard like the Ace Man. That you got to pay for.
Well, Kenny's been down to rehab a few times, a few divorces. He's got some bills to. Oh, no.
She's squeaky clean.
Where's Kim?
She's
with
filming.
Ray J getting banged from behind.
How long does it have to go on for Kenny G? Like, am I good for one song?
She's in Mexico. But other than that, slight miscalculation was a great idea.
Yeah
I don't know. Did Kim come down into the room?
I think she was filming
phone.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, she's filming
it. Yeah, she tweeted the video out herself.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I could have done something better than that.
What are you thinking? What
better?
You got?
Like seal.
Like definitely some sunshine, something outside and flowery. Obviously, you know, that was inside, but it must have been raining down there like over here.
So Kenny G in the backyard. Is that's what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. No, us in a jacuzzi without Kenny G, obviously, but he's up there serenading us.
What if Kenny is down below in the jacuzzi, taking care of her and breathing through
the circular breathing techniques,
just breathing through his saxophone like a reed, you know, like in the movies when you'd go in, you know, undercover, you know.
I don't think that's what they're for.
Yeah, but a regular saxophone is no good for breathing in a jacuzzi because of the shape.
Right,
it'll come right back down on you.
I get it.
His is perfect because he does. The breathing straw saxophone.
You know, you may be onto something.
And
I
he
think
could
I
be
wrong.
Down there taking care of Kim's while you're up top.
What's,
you know?
What's that sound, Kim? Nothing.
Or after this, all of a sudden, you know, she gets calls from Kenny G all the time.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
he's got the keys to the house.
Yeah, like he felt a connection. Yeah, you're right.
That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. God, the thing I'll never understand about Kenny G is a saxophone is the coolest instrument to be seen playing. Mm. Like a guitar, rock guitar is good. You know, drum kit's pretty good.
But you're holding that sax close.
But that sax, like when you're really rocking like Rob Lowe and St. Elmo's Fire, you're looking good with it.
Good example.
He played this stupid little piper. He plays the most effeminate. Like it's nothing.
It's not Clarence Clemens.
You don't look at Clarence the big man. Yeah. He looks great playing that thing.
Yeah.
Imagine how bad Clarence would look. Hey, big man, and he's got that stupid
snake
little
charmer one.
Yes,
yeah. No
play
good.
The good one. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, U.S. Marines have been pictured drinking cobra blood as they took part in military exercises in Thailand, according to the New York Post. So the soldiers were given the cobra blood, and I think we have a picture, as part of their jungle training in the largest American-led military exercise in Asia called Cobra Gold. The troops were taught how to survive in extreme jungle conditions. The annual event got underway on Tuesday with seven countries participating: Singapore, Japan, China, India, South Korea, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the U.S.,
This feels like a trap.
Royal Thai Marine instructors showed the troops how to drink the blood from a cobra and how it can save their life, help them to stay alive when there's no drinking water available, and it provides essential nutrition.
It's probably high in glucose.
Are they hazing us?
It's like high in sugar, probably.
Yeah,
probably.
I'm sure it's the best. I don't think, there's like those cultures are like, you got to drink the tiger's blood and have the horn of the rhino, and all that stuff. And it's like, I think you could basically eat a feral cat blood and still get the same thing you got out of a cobra.
You guys are forgetting. First, you have to catch the cobra.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a good point.
That seems like a tougher thing to do when you're out trapped in the jungle.
Yeah.
Go find a cobra.
Oh, cobras usually find you.
Yeah.
Something's trying to bite me. Let me just kill it. Oh, let me drink the blood.
Yeah,
you're right. I think that is part of the process, because then you know you can survive anything if you catch a cobra with your bare hands.
It also makes for a kind of good movie of the week, like where the guy comes home after the training, and at some point, like, he's just standing out in the patio drinking a beer, and there's a little muskrat that goes along the fence, and his hands just smacks it, grabs it, and puts it in his mouth, and of course the wife gets a little nervous. Like, hon, what was that?
I don't know.
And he just seems start to slowly think like a cobra.
Yeah. Just think about the jungle people. They're probably laughing at these people like, yo, these guys have to catch a snake. I'm just digging up this root and eating this root. It tastes better.
We got rutabaga right here.
Yeah,
Motor City Cobra was what boxer, Lennox Lewis?
Cobra was, what's his name? The Cobra, the body snatcher. I forgot his name.
Tommy the Hitman Hearns.
Oh, yes.
Tommy the Hitman
I'm thinking
Hearns
of somebody else.
Was the Motor City Cobra.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
I believe. Mm. Yeah, I think he had two nicknames. Anyway, sorry.
That name is pretty badass. Motor City Cobra?
Yeah, what's better?
The totally
Hitman?
Sense, but...
Well, you Hitman, you have the alliteration with Hearns. Right. Motor City Cobra, not so much. Who'd you like? You were a Muhammad Ali guy?
I love the middleweights. It was Marvis Hagler for me. The guy that switches up, you know. The guy that trained in the cave. He didn't like press. He didn't like anybody. He just, just don't call him late for dinner.
My name legally department. Who's better? Marvelous Marvin Hagler,
that's
who changed
strong.
His name to Marvelous.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
Or Lloyd B. World Be Free.
Marvelous Marvin.
Better than World
Be
Free.
World Be Free is good. Marvelous Marvin better. You're marvelous.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he
what
just put
Puff
Marvelous
Daddy?
In front of... yeah, but I don't think that's... Is that on his driver's license?
All right, Mr. Daddy, no ticket today.
Okay. Still probably says Sean
What
Holmes.
About Prince? A sign. Change your name to a sign. That's what I was thinking about, changing my name to a sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A big fist.
Yield.
Who's that?
Yield.
That's Lennox
a big
Lewis.
Fist. Yeah, yield to the fist. I like it.
Ooh, there's probably a good chance, because this is something that was on your bucket list, or it still is. Mr. Lewis, is there any chance that your hands have had to be registered in any state in the United States?
Yes.
Wow.
They have? That's on my list.
Yes.
Where have they?
That's awesome.
There's some state down south, any boxer that boxes in that state has to register their hands.
That's wow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, because that's the first time I'm trying to stay off the police list, all those type of things. And when they're taken, I've never been arrested. Oh, why do you have to do this? Oh, you're boxing in this state. We're gonna have to take your license and information about you and your fingerprints.
Do you remember what state it's in?
No, I can't remember, but I did think that was odd.
Don't you think that's badass?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you
on board.
Seem irritated by it. Awesome.
At first, I was, because I didn't have no police record. Now they're giving me one.
Marvis boxing while black. Marvis. Marvis, Marvelous. Well, there was a Marvis Frazier.
Oh.
As well.
Yeah.
You remember, you probably beat Marvis Frazier?
No, I never boxed him.
Tyson boxed him. Before you.
Yeah,
Yeah, so there was a Marvis Frazier.
Wow.
And in a heavyweight.
And
not a big
Joe
guy.
Joe Frazier's son
was Marvis Frazier, who who sort of famously got in with Larry Holmes like way sooner than he should have. Mm-hmm. And Larry Holmes was, it's one thing to have a guy beat you up. It's another thing to have a guy like pump a jab in your face with his left hand and with his right hand signal to the ref like, hey, come over. You're going to stop this. Are we going to end this? Or am I going to have to like keep doing this to this guy who probably
that's a level of losing.
Shouldn't be here. Yeah. But his dad was Joe Frazier, and everyone kind of wanted him to be. Right. The problem with a lot of the Suns is the Suns have the physical ability because their dad is a renowned, you know, world champion, but they grow up rich. So they're missing that component of hungry.
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you about Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you add save hundreds of dollars to your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. That is geico.com. That's right. Spend a few minutes. Could save extra money. Put it in your pocket. Be the most rewarding thing you do all day at Geico. That is Geico.com. All right, Gina, let's do one more.
All right, well, we've been talking a little bit about Bill Cosby, and now there is more Cosby news. In his first message from prison, Bill Cosby calls himself a political prisoner like Gandhi.
Jesus.
The disgraced comedian who is serving 3 to 10 years behind bars for sexual assault writes, quote, "My political beliefs, my actions of trying to humanize all races, genders, and religions landed me in this place surrounded by barbed wire fencing.
Now,
a
hold
room
on.
Made of
Lennox,
steel and iron."
I know you're big Alan Thicke and Benny Hill guy. I see I covered Canada
and then really
I covered the UK.
That's right.
Any thoughts on Cosby? Was he big? Do you know him growing up? I mean, you know the name, but was he big when you were in the UK and in Canada?
Not as a comedian, as a host. I seen him in a couple movies and stuff, and I liked him in those movies.
Ghost Dad, Leonard Part 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the big ones, all the nominated stuff. But he's a political prisoner.
Yeah. He then compares his temporary residence to the quarters of, quote, some of the greatest political prisoners, Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Randall Robinson, and Dr. Benjamin Chavez. I stand upright as a political prisoner and I smile. Cosby insists. Yeah.
So the claim is that his deeds is like his political work or whatever, his like work in the community, this is retribution?
This is some sort of vengeance for what he stood for.
All he did was get doctorates and
I know.
Be America's father.
Yeah. All I gotta say,
I'd say diversity respected.
Like when we were just talking about Jesse and like, well, what about the phone and turn the phone in and a little gray area here. If you ever see the interview of the, I think she was a female basketball player, and he went to her home or she went to his home, and the story she tells, you know, I always tell you about the super specific stuff. Mm-hmm. That is a super specific event by a woman who's super sober, who's basically saying this is exactly what went down. And when you hear her sort of account of the incident, it doesn't sound like there's no wiggle room in that story.
Andrea
it's Constance. Super specific. There's no gray areas. Yeah. There's no, we got a yearbook from his high school. Like there's none of that. There's just her telling exactly what happened.
Right.
Very specifically. And it's very believable.
Well, Cosby also insists that he's a victim of entrapment perpetrated by, quote, a low life district attorney and a corrupt judge.
Bad luck.
Got him. All right. So we have to ask about his wife. So I'm always interested. Camille.
I was like Carmella.
Camille.
Yeah. Camille.
Is Camille happy? Like Camille has cleared this guy. This guy's
complicated question.
He's a philanderer.
Yeah.
He's probably a bit of a blowhard.
Yeah.
Probably smokes a cigar in the kitchen. You know, she can't stand that.
Get rid of him.
He's out. Like she's been standing by her man, but she's got to deal with all of it.
Yeah.
He's cleared out. She's in a big house in Bel Air.
And she
can relax.
She hasn't visited him because the article said that his attorney's the only one who's been to visit him.
She's happy. Like she can't have a press conference saying, thank God, but she's relief, right?
I think relief is the word I would use. Yeah. I think there's a lifting off the shoulders.
Mm. Yeah. All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, this is good news for so many of us. More details are coming out about the Breaking Bad sequel. A feature-length movie based on the hit TV show is in the works, and according to The Hollywood Reporter, it will revolve around Aaron Paul's Jesse Pinkman character. Sources say that Netflix will have first-run rights to the top-secret project, which will then air on AMC, which is where the TV show aired. Series creator Vince Gilligan will write and direct the movie, which will, quote, follow the escape of a kidnapped man, that's Jesse Pinkman, and his quest for freedom. And, of course, Bryan Cranston said if the script calls for it, he's in.
God. Cranston, he's basically the white Kevin Hart. Like, he just never,
he's everywhere.
Never stops. He just never stops making movies, yeah. Right?
Can't keep him down.
Just in a movie with Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
Well done.
The upside?
All they do is make movies. Like, yeah. They must make 6 movies a year. And I think, and I don't know, but I know him a bit, you know, he didn't have a lot of success from 0 to 40,
right.
You know, and I think there's a sort of making hay while the sun shines.
He was Malcolm's dad, and that was it.
I know. The thing about him is he could be anything. I mean, he does comedy, drama, anything, and everything.
Certainly yeah. Helps to be talented. All right, let me tell you about Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium. Technology transforms under pressure 3 times.
3 times, fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. And they did a little test with 5W30 viscosity grade, and it's 3 times. 3 times.
3 times, fool.
Castrol Edge always exceeds the toughest industry standards. New and improved formula. It is the best. It is Castrol Edge. Do we bring it home, Gina Grad?
We'll do it right now. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Michael Mann uses buck slips, people.
Amazing. Did you need that kind of affirmation, confirmation?
Sign of a genius, but he types on his buck slip.
Whatever it takes,
you'll never
man.
Get there.
How that's do you cool. type on a yeah. buck slip?
It's not happening.
Either you have a printer like set Laser to print printer. Out those odd shapes, or as a typewriter. Probably a printer.
Yeah, that looks like a printer.
Because you can do like you print. That's the size. That's about the size of an envelope. You can print an envelope, obviously.
Yeah, man.
A lot of trial and error.
Yeah, I'll read that Ferrari script.
That's
very
awesome.
Excited about that. Wonder if he wants input.
Well,
dare
sure.
I give input?
I think that's why.
I think that's why he gives it to you.
He's really?
Wants you to impress you.
I don't know.
Just
I don't want to overstep my boundaries.
I don't think Michael Mann needs to show off at this point in his career. I think he's looking for, you know, someone to collaborate with.
MM Cool type? Doesn't want to show off?
Cool font.
MM Cool font? LL Cool Jab, come on.
Think about it.
It's too soft. Let me tell you. Your name has to be a strong name. That's why my name is, and people don't really say my name correctly, but my name is Lennox.
Lennox.
Ooh. Yeah, mm-hmm. Lennox Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lennox you out.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that.
You're
yeah.
welcome. You can have that.
I will. I'll take it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
people always call me Lennox. And I'm like, you're taking the ox off my name.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and names are very important. My son's name is Landon.
Mm-hmm.
I got 3 girls as well. Ling, Leia, and Levia.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
Would you care if they boxed?
No. My daughters, I would care. My son can box because, you know, I would love him to try it. He's been to different camps with me, so he loves it. And, you know, he's a good-looking boy, so obviously I have to teach him defense and make sure he doesn't mess up his face.
How old is he?
He's 15. Mm-hmm.
So now's about the time you would start with that.
Yeah.
Obviously he's got the ability. Is he tall like you?
Tall. He's 6 foot.
So he could do it, but again, going back to, I think it was Julio Cesar Chavez has a son who boxes with Marvis Frazier. It's like they grow up with the ability, but man, they grow up with so much wealth and opulence and everything that you
that
never
drive.
Can discount that crazy fire in your belly because they just don't have to box.
You got to move them into the garage.
And start training them like Rocky in Siberia.
You know, you're,
yeah. You
right.
sleep in the Bentley tonight.
You're right when you say that. You know, when I'm always thinking, you know, when kids grow up with a spoon in their mouth or whatever, it's like they don't have that desire, don't have that burning will to be successful because they've got everything given to them. So, yeah, there's always been a question in my mind, does that really happen? And if my son boxes, would that happen to him? And I'm trying to think, well, maybe if the fact that I should still treat him a little rough around the edges, you know, still kind of go after him and have him keep that instinct that he has. And I actually seen it come out one time. He was 9 and he was in the pool and one of my daughters hit him with a bucket. And he was trying to get out, and like, this is the first time I ever seen him really go mad. So I was like, okay, he does have that killer instinct. The killer is his sister.
Yeah, it's in him.
Yeah,
but it's like, again, like you see these guys, and they have all the ability in the world. But at a certain point, when you start getting into the championship rounds, and your lungs are burning, and you can't feel like you can lift your arms and stuff, what propels you then? Because that's when it really just kicks in. And I'm guessing you grew up with not, I mean, you didn't, I don't know if you grew up in poverty. I don't know if how much money you had.
I just grew up with my mother alone, caring for me, looking after me. And I didn't grow up with no silver spoon in my mouth or anything like that.
Your biological dad, did you meet him? Did he come into your life?
Yep.
Did he show up after you started winning?
That same story.
That's right.
It's sad. It's sad.
Well, you know what's sadder? I got famous on the Man Show. My dad still didn't show up. Still sitting in Altadena.
When he sees you, Hey, Man Show.
Let me tell you, you drive my favorite car. I had one as well, Aston.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love
it. Now, so did your dad find you when you became Lennox Lewis?
Yes, when I was Lennox.
And how does that ever really work? Because it never seems to work.
It didn't. I mean, obviously, he did want. He wanted to be in my life. He blamed my mother for him not being in my life, and he obviously wanted a relationship. But it's like, why have a relationship? I'm like, you know, heavyweight champion of the world. I've done without you for all this time. You know, I didn't really push the issue. He didn't really push the issue. But, you know, he's a very nice man. Now I know where I get my niceness from, obviously, him.
You think about it. I'm curious. Like, everybody, I'm open this up to everyone. You abandon your son.
I'm with you so far.
Right. He becomes heavyweight champ. There's two awakenings. One is you might want to just become a certain age. You're not 27 anymore. You're 47 or whatever it is, and you become different as a guy. You calm down. Mm-hmm. You don't think about other women and carousing and blah, blah, responsibility and blah, blah, blah. You want to contact your son. He's heavyweight champ of the world. That's another part of you that goes, hey, that guy's he's findable. Is there an approach that works? Like, you can't bum rush him and go, I'm your dad, I need to borrow money. There's too much in the past, there's resentment and hurt and hate and everything else. Is there one posture that'll work? Is there anything?
I would think that it would be contacting, saying, first of all, I want you to know I don't want anything from you. I want to congratulate you for your success, and here's how you can find me if you're interested. You have to take, would imagine, a super passive approach.
But why do you have to wait till he's a heavyweight champion?
Oh, you don't.
Under the scenario.
In these circumstances, I wouldn't imagine going, hey, we should really grab a drink.
No, Lennox, just to be clear, he could be cruiserweight, he could be light heavyweight champion of the world. You could reach out at any division, and that's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm saying, why reach out after he's famous? You should reach out before. I think it's bad when you do it when he's famous. Oh, he's famous. My son's famous. Let me go reach out to him. Okay, suppose he wasn't famous. Would you still reach out to him? Yeah. So that's I'm really trying to. You never know.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm saying. Is there ever a good posture? And I think Gina's about the only one you can take, because I don't want anything. Here's my number. I understand I did you wrong. If you want to start that down that road, we can.
Does he know your children?
No.
Okay.
So they don't. The thing I've also noticed about those guys, because I got it a little bit, which is there's a reason you have a wiring that will let you walk away from your infant or your young son or daughter, whatever. You have that wiring. Right. And then later on, you have regrets and time and you mature and whatever. But you still have a basic wiring that goes, I can have a child and then go and never see them.
Yeah.
So you go, well, then have they changed? And then what about the grandkids? Like, they don't come around that much. And it's like, yes, because they did it the first time.
Right.
Versus you meet people, men, but especially women, like there is no way. There's no way.
There's no walking away.
There's no walking away. All right. Let's end on a very sad note. But also, I don't know, Lennox, philosophically, you probably feel like, I don't know this guy. Like, I'm not, it's not a big hole in my life. He never was there. He never filled it up.
Well, it was interesting because he basically said he wanted to see me. I went to see him and we spoke. Very, like I said, very nice man. And he felt he had to give me something and he gave me 50 pounds. I'm like, you didn't really have, don't have to give me. He said, no, I want to give you this. And, you know, at first I looked at it and said, guy that hasn't seen me for so long wants to give me 50 pounds. Look, can you believe that? But then I'm thinking, maybe that's all he had. You know, yeah.
By the way, that's 68 U.S. Yeah. That's, don't sneeze at that. That's 1994 dollars.
That's a one-way flight to Phoenix, man. Yeah.
Hey, so I didn't really judge him. I looked at it in a deeper sense. Like, yo, you know, he wanted to give me something. He does feel sorry for not being around. And, you know, he's happy that he has a son and he just wanted to get to know me. And that was it. That was basically it.
Did you see any physicality? Did you see that he was tall? Did you see he had some of the same features?
No, the only feature he had was my soft eyes.
So dreamy.
All right, let me tell you about Simply Safe. Nobody should feel unsafe at home, and that's why you got to protect your home with Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. Simply Safe. They want to protect your house. They're a great company and a great sponsor. Protect your home today. Free shipping at simplysafe.com/Adam. All right, so Michael Mann will be on next week. M.M. Coolfont, is that his?
Yeah.
We're working it out.
LL Cool Jab, Lennox Lewis, Premier Boxing Champions on Fox. That is tomorrow night. Lennox will be doing the color commentary. Big featherweight title fight, Santa Cruz versus Rivera. You can shoot Lennox a tweet at Lennox with an O-X, Lennox Lewis, and watch that fight on Fox coming up. Going to be a great lightweight all-action fight. Let's see. What do I got? Not Taco Bell material. That's my stand-up special. You can see it at a town near you February 27th. You can see that at go to TUGG.com or AdamCarolla.com/events. And my movie Road Hard, you can see that at Tubi with TUBITV.com. The live shows coming up, just go to AdamCarolla.com. We're going to be at the Bray Improv and all that good stuff. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Lennox, Lewis, and Gina Grandball. Ryan, say it. Mahalo. Bukkake.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. For tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Mandry events, books, movies, and more, go to AdamCarolla.com. And stay tuned for AP News.